Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Eileen, and joining me today is Colleen. How are you, Colleen?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Before we get started, I just wanted to thank our listeners for their feedback. We really love hearing from you guys. And if you have a minute, please like and subscribe to our podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if you really like us and have 2 minutes, leave a review. Tonight we're discussing the disappearance of Sneha. Hopefully saying her name right.
Yes.
Sneha Ann Phillip. She was a doctor in Manhattan and is listed as the 2,751st victim of the September 11th attacks in 2001. There is some contention surrounding her disappearance that caused some to question her whereabouts leading up to the attacks. Did she die in the towers while trying to save others, as her family believes? Or is there another explanation for her disappearance? Although there are several theories, it is not known what happened to her.
Thank you for that. So Sneha Ann Phillip was born October 7th, 1969 in Kerala, India. When she was a child, she moved to upstate New York with her mom and dad and her brother John. She grew up in Albany and Hopewell Junction, which is in Dutchess County. And she attended Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And upon graduation, she enrolled in the Chicago School of Medicine in 1995. While she was in med school, she met Ron Lieberman, who was 1 year behind her. He was from Los Angeles. They shared interests outside of school. She really liked to paint. He played music. And they actually ended up dating. Once Sneha realized that it was serious, she took a gap year. So Ron could catch up, and she traveled around Italy so they could graduate at the same time.
Oh.
Yeah. So Ron and Sneha graduate from the Chicago School of Medicine in 1999 and both land internships at hospitals in New York City. Sneha was placed at Cabrini Medical Center in Manhattan, and Ron was at Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx. They rented an apartment in Manhattan, a couple blocks from the World Trade Center. And Sneha was really content with the entire setup. You know, the apartment was near her work. Her brother also lived in Manhattan. She had other family in the city, cousins, and that. Her parents lived about an hour or so outside of the city in Dutchess County. So overall, it was a good move for her.
Yeah.
You know, she was close with her family. Mm. So this brings us up to September 10th, 2001. Ron headed to work the morning of the 10th while Sneha had the 10th and the 11th off of work. She spent the day hanging out at home and doing some chores around the house, and she spent several hours IMing her mom. In the later afternoon, she told her mom over IM that she was going to go shopping, and a little bit before 5 p.m., she leaves the house in a short sleeve dark colored dress. Around 6:45, she makes a purchase at Century 21, which is a department store and not the realtor company, which is what I originally thought it was.
Yeah, I know. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh.
I did think that was, it took me a minute. I was like, why just a casual purchase at a realtor
company? It's a house or something.
Yeah. Century 21 is a department store in New York, and it happened to be down the street from her apartment. She purchases about $500 worth of bedding, shoes, and lingerie on the Amex that she shares with Ron. And Ron returns home from work a little before midnight the 10th. And Sneha was not home. However, this is not unusual for her. She often went out and stayed with friends or her cousin or her brother. And when she did this, she was supposed to call, but it also wasn't unusual for her to forget to call.
Right.
So Ron wakes up the morning of the 11th, and Sneha still has not come home. He leaves Manhattan for work and goes right into a meeting. When he comes out of the meeting, he sees his coworkers huddled around the TV, and they're watching news coverage of a plane crash into the First World Trade Center tower.
Yeah, and the morning, obviously, shook the world, right? September 11th at 8:46 a.m., just to give some background on the World Trade Center attacks, five hijackers crashed American Airlines Flight 11, bound for Los Angeles from Logan International Airport in Boston, Massachusetts, into the North Tower. The plane was a Boeing 767, had 81 people on board, including the five hijackers. The plane hit the tower going about 465 miles per hour, and the point of impact was between the 93rd and the 99th floors. The plane was planning on a cross-country flight, so it was carrying around 10,000 gallons of jet fuel, which I just kind of side thought, didn't realize just how much.
I did not know how much jet fuel was, you know, what the mile per gallon, I guess, that yeah. a plane gets, but it is a big number.
Yeah, me too. It was just like, wow. Many people on the ground believed the initial crash to be an accident. The plane was flying so low, you know, it's not common to see planes flying so low over Manhattan. So, you know, they probably just thought it's like, oh, and I remember hearing that too, you know, like everybody thought it was an accident first and then,
right.
And then a little over 15 minutes after Flight 11 hit the North Tower, United Flight 175 hit the South Tower at 9:03 a.m. at about 540 miles per hour between the 77th and the 85th floors. The plane was also a 767 with 65 people on board, including the five hijackers. This plane was also bound for L.A. from Boston and was carrying a similar fuel load to Flight 11. After the first crash, most news outlets were covering the events live and caught the second crash on camera live.
I know I saw the second plane crash live. I was watching coverage with my mom in the living room. I can very vividly remember. I was in, I think, the fifth grade when that happened.
Yeah,
I was young, but I do remember it very vividly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a day nobody would ever, you know, will ever forget. And especially if you happen to catch it while you're watching the news. I remember coming home, I was staying the night at a friend's house, and I came home to get ready for work. We lived just down the street, and my brother's like, run, a plane hit the World Trade Center, and I'm like, what? And then we saw the second plane, and we're like, and that's just when it kind of hit us that, wow, we're under attack. Like, this right. isn't an accident. The South Tower actually burned for 56 minutes, and the North Tower burned for 102 minutes before they collapsed due to the jet fuel explosions and the subsequent intense fires that burned in the buildings, weakening all the structures. The collapse caused several additional fires and damaged the surrounding buildings. Temperatures in the center of the blaze were estimated to be about 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. This is hot enough to destroy human remains. The collapse also caused a huge cloud of smoke, dust, and debris to cover the surrounding neighborhoods. And again, just seeing that on the news was, I mean, you would think that... I mean, it was like whiteout conditions, but it wasn't snow.
It was, right, yeah. The pictures are, you know, creepy to this day.
And you can imagine, I'm sure everybody, especially Ron, is probably frantic seeing this.
Right, yeah. So the reason we kind of brought up some of the details is because they end up being important based on the proximity of their apartment to the World Trade Centers. Ron tries to reach Sneha at her home repeatedly with no answer. And after the tower collapse, Manhattan is basically in chaos. And there's, you know, spotty power and spotty phone service. Most people are trying to get a hold of their loved ones at this point. By 3 p.m., neither Ron nor her family had been in contact with Sneha, so Ron catches a ride with an ambulance from Jacoby back to Manhattan, and it takes him about 6 hours to get to his neighborhood, which puts the time at about 9 p.m. the 11th.
And just to put the 6 hours into perspective, it's about a 30-minute drive with regular New York traffic, so you're talking about 17, 18 miles. So you can just imagine the
six
chaos.
6 hours.
Yeah.
He arrives home to his building, and he actually can't get into the apartment at all because since the electricity is out, the automatic doors won't open. So he ends up crashing on a friend's couch for the night and basically is just left to try to get into the apartment again in the morning. On the morning of the 12th, he does get into his apartment, and he finds no sign of Sneha. A window had been left open the afternoon before on the 10th, and dust and soot from the tower collapse had just poured in through the open window. The only footprints in the dust were from their cats, and there were also no shopping bags or any sign that she had left, come back and left stuff and then left again, reaffirming his belief that she never came back to the apartment after the planes hit the towers.
Right.
So Ron lists Sneha as a missing person with the NYPD immediately, but over 10,000 people were listed as missing in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. So there was no way to get Sneha's case investigated with any more expediency than any other missing person.
Right. Yeah.
Ron spoke with reporters trying to drum up interest in her story, but as soon as they discovered that she was not heard from since the 10th, reporters lost interest. John, her brother, tries a bit of a different tactic and goes to another reporter and tells a different story. He says that he was on the phone with her when the plane hit the North Tower, and according to him, she said, quote, she had to go help, and rushed to the World Trade Center to assist in the rescue and triage effort. In reality, the two had not spoken in a couple of weeks because they had had an argument. And despite this effort and, you know, the subsequent coverage that he got from the story, no new leads or witnesses emerged. And John actually begins to regret his approach because he feels her story got lumped into the overwhelming narrative of people who were lost in the towers while trying to help. So people basically assume that she had died. And this actually ends up stifling their search efforts.
So like an unintended consequence.
Basically, yeah. The family decides to refocus their search efforts to September 10th. Because this lead seems to be more promising, because at least there's a chance that she could possibly be found alive. So Ron starts to retrace her last steps with the IM messages and the Amex charges. And once he realizes that she had gone to Century 21, he starts dropping off missing person flyers at the other locations in the city. The downtown location near their apartment was closed because of its proximity to the World Trade Center, and you know, there's a massive like search and cleanup effort going on. All the employees that worked there were sent to different locations. Sonia Moore was an employee who regularly worked at the downtown location in the shoe department, and she recognized Sneha as a regular customer. She saw the missing persons flyer at the Brooklyn location and contacted Ron. Sonia basically tells Ron she remembers seeing Sneha the afternoon of the 10th in the shoe department, and she was with a friend. This friend was described as small, possibly Indian, and probably in her early 30s. Ron rules out friends and family that fit that description on this day. And to this day, no one has come forward, so the person's identity remains unknown. Ron reviews the security tapes from Century 21. And while the shoe department didn't have cameras, so he doesn't have footage of Sneha with her friend, he did find her browsing the coat section, but she was alone. Now, as things started to calm down after the events of 9/11, the police opened an investigation into Sneha's disappearance. But after they ruled Ron out as a suspect, in the absence of any other obvious leads, they lump her together with other missing 9/11 victims. In response to this slow police investigation, Ron and Sneha's family hire a private investigator to conduct a parallel investigation. And the PI works on tracing her last known hours. He focuses on trying to find someone who saw her after she was at Century 21. He visits places that she was known to frequent, bars and restaurants in and around the Century 21. He brought photos to the ferries to see if someone remembered her in the mass of people trying to flee Manhattan on the 11th, but turns up empty. He also proposes the idea that Sneha may have packed up and disappeared intentionally to start a new life. But after a thorough search of her belongings, he quickly casts doubt on his own theory, basically. He finds no trace of a plan to leave, or even no trace of, like, an ongoing affair.
Or her, like, leaving with somebody.
Right, yeah. Sneha also left behind her glasses, her passport, her driver's license, and all credit cards with the exception of the Amex that she shared with her husband. So I do want to know from you, what do you think about the theory that she left intentionally?
I don't think so either, because, I mean, either, I guess, in my, I never had a plan to leave, but I mean, why would she take the Amex but leave everything else? Or why wouldn't she take everything? So let's say she was leaving her husband, if that, you know, she seemed to be having an affair and she left her husband, she would take her passport and her glass. I mean, she'd pack up and leave, right? Unless she, I mean, or did she get a whole new identity? But then why take the Amex and why go shopping that day? I mean, it just seems, if you're going to be doing something that huge, like I'm going to get a new identity and leave and pack up and go away, why would you go buy $500 worth of home goods?
That's how I feel about it. You know, if she had a plan to leave, I don't think it was her plan to leave on the 10th.
Right.
You know, basically is how I feel about it.
Yeah, you know? I just, you know, and it seemed like he sort of cast doubt on himself too. It's like, yeah, maybe this is it, but then realized, oh, okay, maybe not.
It does seem like an obvious, I guess, initial theory.
Yeah, I would probably think that too. I mean, if you're trying to figure out where did she go, and yeah, so I mean, I get why he's doing that, but or says that, but I think just a little investigation seems to say probably not.
Yeah, that's how I feel about that too. So I'm gonna move on to two pieces of the investigation that I find interesting. First is the phone call. So Ron was the only one home on the night of the 10th. Someone made a call from their home phone to his cell phone at 4 a.m. the early morning of the 11th. Now, Ron says he doesn't definitely remember that it was him, but it was likely he kind of rolled over and sleepily used the house phone to check his cell phone voicemail.
So that's interesting. So a call from their landline was made to his cell phone.
Right.
And he thinks it could have been him. And I'm just going to be coming at this from my own perspective. My phone is generally by my bed, my cell phone.
No, I'm the same way.
But not everybody. I can't, you know, be so naive to think everybody's going to be that way. But I mean, and if you were checking your messages, if I was wanted to check my phone from, because that's what he's saying, right? I use my landline to call my cell phone to check for messages.
Right. Yeah. That's what he's saying.
That's, I mean, if his phone was just in the other room, he's in a New York apartment, I would imagine it's not very big. So, I mean, just assuming, I know New York and, you know, city apartments are just not going to be, wouldn't you just grab that and look to see for the message icon?
I wonder if, because cell phones back then weren't as, you know, he didn't have an iPhone, right? So
sure.
Maybe it was less, because my phone is next to my bed charging at night. So,
In 2001, I think I had a flip phone probably, or a Nokia.
Oh, the brick phones, the Nokia brick phones.
Yeah. But it would tell you if you had a voicemail, you know, you had an icon that said you have a message. And
yeah, I assume maybe he didn't have it, like maybe he rolled over and the landline was
there
closer. And that makes enough sense, I guess. It's just odd to me.
It's just odd. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's lying. Sorry, I don't mean to come at it like I don't believe what he's saying, but you know, it's just kind of weird. But I suppose I'm also coming at it from a very recent perspective, going, why isn't it on your ear when you go to sleep, like me?
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
The other piece of the investigation that I find interesting is the apartment video footage. So Ron says he knows Sneha didn't make it back to their apartment after the attacks because of all the soot and dust that came through the window that was undisturbed. And then there were also no shopping bags left in the apartment. There is video footage of the lobby of their apartment building right around the time the first plane would have hit the North Tower, and a woman walks in from outside, matches Sneha's general description, similar build, hair, and a similar style and color, you know, dark color dress. According to her family, the woman also has similar mannerisms to Sneha. However, this woman was not carrying any shopping bags, and if she was coming home from a night out, you might think that she would have her stuff with her.
Mm-hmm.
The woman waits at the elevator for several minutes and then turns around and walks out of the building. Now, because of the way the sunlight was coming in through the window, the footage is too washed out to make a definitive ID, but her family believes that it was her. And this video footage kind of cemented her family's belief to reevaluate their search approach to focus on the 9/11 angle. You know, if you believe that the woman in the video is Sneha, if the person in the video left the lobby because they heard the plane crash and it was Sneha, it would be possible, you know, she heard the crash, walked outside, saw what happened, and then ran to go help.
Right.
The family also believes that if she were a victim of foul play on the 10th, there would be some sort of evidence trail or paper trail beyond just the purchases at Century 21. If someone had, you know, it's horrible, but if someone had murdered her,
right,
she would likely have been found.
Would have probably turned up in subsequent investigations. Something would have probably happened. So that's really interesting.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Interesting with the video footage, though. I mean, yeah, she didn't have the bags, but, you know, I'd be curious if, you know, they're seeing that and they want that to be her, or maybe it really was her. I mean, I can't imagine having somebody missing. That's an awful, you know, awful thing.
Yeah, so. I think the fact that she doesn't have any bags is a little weird, but then if she maybe...
I mean, $500, though, right?
Was with a friend, and then she was, like, they had been out partying.
Maybe just left at her friend's house,
I guess. I'll come back for this later. I'm going to, like, get home and change and shower.
Yeah, true.
I guess.
And then there's a plane, you know, that's got to... They were pretty close to the World Trade Center, so could be her, but...
It's one of those... There's so much about this case. It's like, could be, but we'll never know.
Right, yeah. It's always a thing.
Yeah. So with no new leads, the case is stagnant, and the family's starting to side with the theory that she disappeared and died in the towers. Ron and the family become more active in 9/11 grief and support groups. They attended annual memorials on the second anniversary of the attacks. They held a memorial for Sneha, where they buried an urn full of ashes from the World Trade Center. And Ron also files a claim with the Victims' Compensation Fund.
So background on what the Victims Compensation Fund is, it was created as an act of Congress that the victims of the attack would be compensated in exchange for not suing the airlines involved in the attacks. The lawyer appointed as a special master of the Victims Compensation Fund named Kenneth Feinberg, responsible for settling the payouts of the amounts. He estimated how much each victim would earn in a life, in a full lifetime, quote unquote, and offered them an amount, or offered an amount to the families. If the families accepted the offer, they could not appeal the decision. If the family chose to appeal, they presented their case in a hearing. Many families lost family members who were high earning professionals and chose to appeal because they thought the offers were too low. In the end, the fund paid out $7 billion to 97% of the families with an average payment of $1.8
million. And so Ron says he files a claim because he wants to start a memorial fund in Sneha's name. And when questioned why he filed a claim at all. So the police decide to start an investigation into her disappearance. And like I said, they considered her to be a 9/11 victim before her family did. But as the family began to change their search tactics to focus on the towers, the police began to theorize that she was never at the towers on 9/11 at all. Because during their investigation, they began to uncover a life that was a little bit different than what Ron and her family had disclosed. And it showed a life that was spiraling out of control a little bit. Mm-hmm. First off, she was fired from her internship at Cabrini in spring of 2001. The internship that she moved to New York for. Excessive tardiness and, quote, alcohol-related issues were cited as reasons for not renewing her contract, and that is intern speak for getting fired.
Right.
She also got into a dispute with a coworker at Cabrini that landed her in jail for a night. Sneha claimed that on an evening out with coworkers at a bar, a fellow intern grabbed her inappropriately. And after the investigation, the Manhattan DA dropped the charges against the coworker, and then the police actually arrested Sneha for filing a false report.
Wow.
The prosecutors offered to drop the charges against her if she recanted her statement, but she refused and she ends up spending the night in jail. The police also report marital issues between Ron and Sneha after she was fired from Cabrini. She often stayed out late all night with people who were her husband didn't know, whom she had met at, you know, different bars. And she favored gay and lesbian bars, but Ron says this was because after the incident with the coworker, she didn't want to be hit on by men. And allegedly, these late nights out with people she met at bars took a turn when her brother John, again allegedly, walked in on Sneha having sex with his girlfriend less than a month before her disappearance. This is the supposed incident that is the reason why Sneha and her brother weren't speaking at the time of her disappearance.
I would assume that's a good reason.
That would be a pretty good reason not to talk to your sister. But yeah. Her struggles with substance abuse and depression and her sexuality spilled into her new internship, which was at St. Vincent's. At the time of her disappearance, she was suspended for not meeting with a substance abuse counselor, which is why she wasn't at work on the 10th or the 11th. The morning she disappeared, she was actually in court pleading not guilty to filing a false complaint for the incident involving her coworker at Cabrini. According to the NYPD, Ron and Sneha got into a shouting match at the courthouse. Ron was allegedly upset that Sneha was abusing drugs and staying out all night with women she met at bars, and Sneha stormed out. So the family flatly denies the claims made by the police. They say the reason that she was fired from Cabrini was because of the racial and sexual bias she was subjected to while working there. Further, they said that the biases against her weren't investigated properly because she was a whistleblower and filed a complaint against a coworker. Ron admits that Sneha would go home with other women she met at bars, but he insisted that it was strictly platonic. When she would go home with them, they would stay up talking, making art, or listening to music until they fell asleep. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. John disputes the claim about Sneha and his girlfriend having sex, saying it never happened. And Ron denies having a fight at the courthouse on the 10th. And the family says that the police fabricated, or, you know, at least wildly extrapolated certain facts to put together this explanation of a woman who was on a downward spiral because they didn't do a thorough investigation at the time of her disappearance. Her depression and alcohol issues were said to be a symptom of a rough period, but she was putting her life back together.
So do we know where the police, got this information? Is it very...
Well, they did their own investigation.
Sure. I wonder who they were talking to or who had, them arguing at the courthouse, let's say, or...
As far as I understand it, they said that they, you know, it was, like, witnessed by multiple people.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what struck me... kind of, you know, staying the night at, if she's favoring gay and lesbian bars or lesbian bars in particular, and staying the night with women, purely platonic, I don't think so.
Staying out with people that your, you know, boyfriend, husband, girlfriend, wife doesn't know, staying out all night is, I feel like, a cause for concern.
Right.
You would be freaked out if Emily was, you would just be worried about where she was if... Emily just didn't come home some nights.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Just be. And I'd be awfully irritated if she was out spend the night with women making art.
Making art or talking until they fell asleep.
Yeah. So, and you know what, though? That's their marriage and whatever. That's
right.
Things happen in between them. He may not want to. My personal opinion is. She was probably struggling with sexuality and maybe that's where the drinking's coming in and things like that.
I think it doesn't give the police a pass on, you know, not investigating very much at the beginning. Again, they were busy.
9/11. Yeah.
They were busy, but, you know, I feel like the report kind of makes it about, like, her high-risk lifestyle or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and I don't like
and
that.
I don't like that.
Because it's true. It does feel like I don't care what she was doing or whatever. It's, you know, you're still a missing person. You just need to investigate it, you know. And I wonder if that happens a lot, you know, where they decide that it's not if this, you know, victims of circumstance kind of thing, right? Kind of like with the Grim Sleeper, you know.
Right.
Oh, well, they're hookers, so we're not going to look into it. So what, is she a party girl?
Let themselves off the hook a little bit, almost.
Right. So, because she's a party girl, so we're just going to say that that's it. So.
Right. Yeah, that's the one that I just don't, you know, it doesn't sit right with me, I guess.
Yeah.
Ron and the family have never made the contents of the report put together by their private investigator public, so it's not known whether the contents of the report would refute or corroborate the police investigation.
And that just might be because they have some very personal information in there
exactly.
that they may not want to send to the world. And, you know.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I mean, he's not asking. He's asking to find out what happened to his wife, not, you know, for the rest of the world to, I guess, judge. So I don't blame him for keeping it or think that it's odd that he would keep it private.
Right, me either. It's...
So let's talk about her status as a 9/11 victim. To be listed as a 9/11 victim, you must have, quote, clear and convincing evidence of a person's exposure to the attack. But the application of this law is not even. And we'll actually talk a little bit more about that later. I have a couple examples. Sneha was on the victim list until January 2004, when she was removed by the medical examiner's office. The reason for the removal was because she was, quote, known to be missing on the 10th, and they have no substantial evidence she was even alive on the 11th. A judge upheld this decision in November 2005 when Ron's petition to set Sneha's date of death as 9/11/2001 was denied. Instead, her date of death was set at 9/10/2004, and this is in accordance with New York state law, that says a missing person whose family wants them claimed as deceased will have their death date listed as 3 years after their unexplained absence began. Hmm. Because Sneha did not have a death certificate with a 9/11/2001 death date, his claim with the Victims Compensation Fund was denied. And it's actually estimated that this claim would be worth approximately $3 to $4 million. Police have no concrete evidence as to what happened to Sneha despite their investigation. You know, it's just as likely that she ran away, was the victim of a random crime on the 10th, committed suicide, or was the victim of a 9/11 attack as far as they're concerned.
Hmm.
In January 2008, the decision was reversed and Sneha was declared dead on 9/11/2001. The decision was that basically the explanation that she was at the towers assisting people was highly probable based on the evidence that was provided. The quote from the ruling says, you know, this does not require absolute certainty. It merely requires that the evidence makes the conclusion highly probable. Even without proof establishing that her, even without irrefutable proof, establishing that her route took her past the World Trade Center at the time of the attack, the evidence shows that it's highly probable that she died that morning at that site. The one dissenting judge said that since it's not known where she was the night of the 10th, it requires speculation to say she was even in the vicinity of the World Trade Centers on the 11th.
That's, I'm okay with the decision, I think. Because it is hard to say. I mean, the dissenting opinion, it does require speculation, but it also requires speculation that, you know, she wasn't. They live so close.
Right.
I mean, New York, she could have been doing anything, coming home, walking past. You know, you just don't know. But the fact that she lived and from the police investigation seemed to be that her usual haunts were to be right around the same area wouldn't. You know, and that they hadn't, yes, they haven't heard from her, but that wasn't also uncommon. So she could have just been coming home. So I think that's fair.
Yeah. And I think it provides closure to the families.
Yeah. It's important.
6 months after the appeal decision, Sneha's family received notification from New York City that her name was being added to the victim list.
So Sneha's death date ruling actually compares to a couple other cases. Juan Lafuente, 61, was the husband of the mayor. I'm going to say this so bad. Poughkeepsie?
No, I think it's Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie,
there's
going to
be people in New York screaming at us.
You know, and I apologize.
I think it's Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie. So Juan Lafuente, 61, was the husband of the mayor of Poughkeepsie. I may just have you say it. He worked 8 blocks north of the towers. His wife presented no concrete evidence of his whereabouts on 9/11. Circumstantial evidence at the hearing was a witness testifying that they saw Lafuente at a deli they frequented on 9/11, saying he had a meeting at the World, saying he had a meeting at the World Trade Center that morning. Lafuente was also a volunteer fire marshal, so he would likely have had the same instinct as Sneha to run and aid the first responders. He was ruled to be a victim of the attacks before Sneha was. And then there was Fernando Molinar, 19, was an Ecuadorian immigrant, not seen or heard from by family since September 8th, 2001. When he called his mom to tell her that he was starting a new job at a pizza place next to the World Trade Centers. He's presumed to be working at the time of the attacks. His roommates contacted his family after he did not return home after the attacks. His petition was rejected by the court, and the decision was never appealed. So
yeah, those are two other examples of that same law and how they're not really applied evenly.
Yeah.
You could almost argue that Fernando would be more likely to be near the World Trade Centers than Juan since he worked there. But that issue, I think, came up a lot, especially when it, you know, the victims' compensation fund money came into play.
Mm-hmm.
So for Sneha to get, you know, that's why she was added to the list, taken off the list, and then added again.
Right.
By the time the family got the death certificate with the 9/11/2001 death date, the victim's compensation fund had actually closed, so Ron and her family would never receive any of the compensation money.
That's Too bad.
Her name was added to the victim list and the memorials. And like I said before, her family buried an urn full of World Trade Center ashes since no remains have been found. That is not uncommon, though. There are hundreds of 9/11 victims whose remains have never been conclusively identified due to the extensive fire and damage of the towers.
Yeah.
So let's move on to theories. The first theory, which I think is just an obvious theory, is foul play by a family member, and I'm firmly in the no camp on that.
I just don't think there's anything to suggest that at all.
Right, yeah. If you believe the police reports, then maybe, but I just don't think that...
I was going there. Maybe the police reports, but I doubt it. I just don't really think so.
I don't think they would go so deep into hiring a private investigator and trying to drum up interest just to cover up the fact that, you know, it was...
Yeah, the only reason why I go, well, let's just consider all angles or whatever, but that's, you know, no, I don't. I'm opinion, no.
Yeah, same. The next theory is that she died on the 10th. And I feel like maybe if, as like a victim of foul play, I don't think it was an accident. I feel like she would have been found if she, you know, I don't know, slipped and fell or something.
I'm the same. It's a maybe. And that's the kind of thing with these sort of missing person cases. I feel like it's always, you know, I'm going to say maybe a lot. But, you know, maybe she ran into the wrong person, you know. So maybe.
Yeah, it's a maybe. The third is the back to the that she intentionally disappeared.
I say no. I just don't.
I mean, maybe, but she would have to be so good at covering her tracks.
Yeah, and yeah, and why take the Amex?
Yeah, why not take anything else from your old life?
Yeah, $500 worth of things. And
yeah, again,
run away.
Maybe, but probably no.
Yeah.
The fourth is suicide, and I mean, I guess you could say maybe only because anything is possible, and you know, if you believe what was in the report from the police, her life was kind of spiraling. But I don't think that there's any proof that she was suicidal that we know of.
Yeah, again with the maybe. But I would think I think you would have also have found her, because if somebody is going to kill themselves generally, I mean, I just don't know if they would do it to where they'd never be found again. She probably would have done it and somebody would have found her.
That's what I'm thinking, or she would have left some sort of note. She was close with her family.
Right. She would have done something to make it known or done it somewhere public and she would have been found. So again, the maybe, but.
And then the last theory is that she died in the World Trade Center. And I feel like, again, maybe, but no more likely for me anyway than that she, you know, died on the 10th.
Yeah, she very well could have been there helping, walking, and been in the wrong place in the wrong time, and swept up in the chaos too,
you know,
something like that. Or like you said, very well been on the tent. It's really hard to say. We did have that footage that could be her, and if we say that is her, then you know I'd probably be more in the most likely camp. But we just
same.
Don't know.
If you told me for sure that was Sneha, like on the apartment lobby footage, I would definitely say that she probably did go try and assist, but because they've never conclusively identified who that was, to me anyway, it doesn't, I don't know, I guess.
Yeah, same. I don't know. So it's just too it's too bad. It's really sad, you know. But I think that wraps us up for today. Thank you for joining us. Please visit our website, misconductpodcast.com. I have tongue twister every time, to leave your thoughts and comments on today's case. Any links to further reading or other content will be posted below the episode. Misconduct is available on SoundCloud and iTunes. You can also visit our Facebook and Instagram pages. Please visit the website for those links. And if you love us, please leave us a review on iTunes. As always, if you'd like to email suggestions for an upcoming episode, you can do so via the website or get us on Facebook. We'll see you next time.
Tired
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.